Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. I'm joined in studio by St. Louis Public Radio political reporter Joe Manis to go behind the big headline of this very day, Governor Eric Greitens' first budget. And it's tight, with significant spending cuts slicing about 2% from the $27.6 billion spending plan, which must be ready and balanced by July 1st. Joe, good to have you with us once again.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me.
One of the things I'd like to do at the very beginning, Joe, is clarify a point that might be confusing some people. We got a $27.6 billion budget, but there's a budget within the budget, the $9.4 million.
Right, right. I mean, I think sometimes, in fact, on my story, not that it's perfect, but I didn't even lead with the $27 million. Folks, it's all about billion. It's the $9.4 billion funds most of state government and most of the programs. The other roughly $18 billion is federal. Much of it is federal money that just passes through, waves goodbye, comes in and goes out. And so it's like the pass-through Medicaid portion that the federal government provides, other stuff over which the General Assembly really has no control. There's also like the conservation, the state's dedicated conservation money, that goes in that other bigger door, goes in, goes out. The General Assembly has no control over it. So when people think, oh my gosh, it's $27 billion, they ought to be able to find this and that. Well, as I said, $18 billion, they really have no control over. It's this $9.4 billion that really funds everything, most of the stuff that you see. Most of the stuff that affects your life.
Meaning the governor in this case and coming up with a budget has much less to work with than most people realize.
Right, exactly, yeah. Exactly. And the General Assembly realizes this. And this is the other thing. I mean, the governor, whoever's governor, they lay out a proposal. They submit it to the General Assembly. And then the General Assembly spends a couple months crafting their own, which may or may not mirror what the governor presented them. Now that they're all of the same party, there's conventional wisdom that the General Assembly will be more receptive to what Governor Greitens is presenting as opposed to previous Governor Jay Nixon, a Democrat. But that doesn't always mean the case. There's already tensions over various other issues that could affect some things when you're arguing. I mean, this is a guy who a week ago sat in the Senate President Pro Tem's office and was tweeting, in effect, little jabs and insults at senators who were considering whether or not to raise their pay in these tight fiscal times. And whether that was good or bad, they ended up not doing it. And some people would say that was great. There are some senators who were sore about it, especially because they were called into the Ron Richards office one by one to talk to the governor, and some of them were irked about that. And while technically that has nothing to do with it, it does, because as you know, personal relationships are everything.
And he continued that tack yesterday in his speech. As I understand it, he kind of said part of the problem is you guys. He didn't say it in precisely those words, but that's what the interpretation was.
Oh, yeah. Here's a little bit of it. He says, for decades, insiders, special interests, lobbyists, and prior politicians have made a mess of our budget. They've let programs get more expensive year after year without asking if those programs are serving our citizens well. They fought to protect their pet projects and their slice of the pie. So while some say, well, he was kind of jabbing Nixon, in effect, the Republicans have been controlling the General Assembly and the budget process for over a decade. So that was really a poke in the eye at fellow Republicans. Now, some are more concerned about that than others.
That's not the way to win friends and influence people when you need their help somewhere along the line.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. He got elected. Eric Greitens is in some ways Missouri's version of Donald Trump, but different. I am not comparing the two, other than they are both outsiders. Neither of them had held public office before, and both of them have strong sense of what they want to be doing in office that may or may not mesh with the other members of their party. That's what I'm trying to get at here. So it's whether or not Greitens even cares whether or not he upsets Republicans, because frankly, you know, that's some voted for him because of this.
But I don't want to jump too far out of the arena here, but he may not care. But we've talked before about the presidential potential, if I can put it that way, or the ambition of an Eric Greitens to move on at some point? You want to have a pretty good record, and you don't want it blemished by animosity with your peers.
Well, he's in his early 40s. So he's at the beginning of what could be a stellar national career, or we've all seen careers crash and burn, including the Democrat who he defeated in November, Chris Koster, who had been expected to win and who some had been talking about as presidential material down the road. That may or may not happen again. That may happen again. But my point being that ambitions, political ambitions, can change overnight depending on their fortunes and what happens with the voters and other things. So a lot of people are paying attention to this budget because this is Greitens' first budget. And he had admitted that he didn't know, it's not like he had gotten a lot on this. He's been smart in that he's kept some of the budget veterans who met with him repeatedly. He spent a lot of time in the budget division's office talking to people about it. So he's trying to be a quick learner. But there are some controversial things in his budget, or controversial things cut from his budget, which could cause some discussion in the General Assembly over the next few weeks.
We'll talk about those in a moment. But just to clarify a couple of things, this is why he did not include his budget in the State of the State address. He needed time to kind of get his ducks in a row for this, correct?
Well, that's why some, including me, were surprised that he did the State of the State address when he did. It's not unusual for a new governor to have the state of the address about a week earlier than they generally happen. Usually, a new governor often has it a week later, so that they by that time will have a budget together to deliver. But in his case, he decided to do it early, basically to expand on his vision, and so now, he did this week, laying out his budget. So he's made it kind of two separate things. And it'd be interesting. Maybe next year he'll do the same thing.
Why Nixon, Missouri?
Well, I think part of it is he's really trying to appeal to rural Missouri. I mean, you got to understand, he's a Republican, but most of the rural groups didn't endorse him, okay? And he is from St. Louis. And he's mindful of that. He's a smart guy. And so he's going to be spending, probably a lot of time in rural Missouri when he can. I mean, it's not unusual. I mean, a lot of major political figures in the state, Republican or Democrat, who are from St. Louis. I mean, Jim Talent, when he was in the U.S. Senate, he used to do the same thing. So I think he wanted to, have another connection with rural Missouri. Also, he picked a school because he is trying to really focus on education. Because education, this is one of the common threads between rural and urban Missouri. Public education is a very key thing. And in rural Missouri, that's probably one of the top issues for rural legislators. They want to protect their public education.
Sure. Which he did in the budget. I mean, the K through 12 did pretty well in the budget comparatively.
Yeah, comparatively. But frankly, if you look at the breakdown, actually the general revenue portion was about flat in effect, or maybe just down slightly. There is extra money, but a lot of it is coming from other sources. So the bottom line, there's slightly more, but they found other ways to get it.
People probably are wondering why Missouri, and it's not alone in this situation, why Missouri is in this financial fix. I mean, it's been 7 years or so, whatever it is, 8 years since the most recent recession. The economy is making a comeback. Why are we in this spot?
Well, there's a couple different reasons. One of them is somewhat controversial. We've had some tax cuts, and some of them are going into effect this year. And this will be some tax cuts for corporations, and there'll be a little bit reduction in the personal income tax percentage. There's supposed to be a phase-in. Now, it's dependent on how much money the state brings in. There has to be at least about $100-150 million brought in additional each year for the tax cuts to kick in. But even with our tight situation, they're expected to kick in. So that's one of the things. Another thing, there had been some previous tax cuts, mainly directed towards business, that also have resulted in lower corporate on various programs that the state has. The state's phased out the business franchise tax. There's been different things that have been done. The idea was that they would ignite more business, ignite more income in other ways, and then the state would get it back. And that hasn't happened to the degree that some had hoped, but it doesn't mean it won't. And now sales tax collections have been somewhat more or less flat, and that's the public purchasing. So that's something that's been a concern for several years now. Actually, the individual income tax in the state for the last couple years has done fairly well. So it looks like people are working and getting paid, and some of them are getting pay increases. It's just when you take all these factors into account, Missouri is doing better than a lot of its surrounding states. I mean, I want to emphasize this. For all our tight, mm-hmm. we are not Kansas, where they're facing huge budget problems, and we are not Illinois, which is facing huge budget problems. So from that standpoint, we're looking pretty good.
I wonder if there's any regret amongst politicians for not having accepted the government's Medicaid money under the Affordable Care Act a couple of years ago.
Well, I think privately there may be some. Now, Greitens has towed the Republican line very much. In fact, in his budget, he blames some of the cuts, saying it's because of the Affordable Care Act, which frankly is not, that's not the case. The Affordable Care Act would have called for expanding Medicaid. Missouri didn't do it. So that was $6 billion that we did not get. And former Governor Nixon, who had pressed for the expansion, had noted several times that there was some current state Medicaid spending that they could have shifted to that $6 billion if that had happened. So they have contended that about $140 million a year is money that the state spending that it wouldn't have to spend, that it would come out of that federal portion if they had gone for it. But to be fair, and in some ways, I think some Republicans have been more upfront about it than others. But frankly, the bottom line is they have a philosophical objection to having too much government involvement in healthcare. And so in some ways, it didn't matter how much money. This is something that they really believe that the state should not be doing, that the federal government should not be doing. You're seeing that debate play out in Washington, but you're seeing members of Congress being confronted with the fact if they don't keep the Affordable Care Act, they're going to be knocking about between 20 and 30 million people off the insurance rolls. And apparently some of that might affect other people who are on the insurance rolls. So Missouri, while we didn't expand Medicaid, we are impacted by some of the stuff going on in Washington because over 500,000 people in Missouri do get their insurance off the Affordable Care Act's marketplace.
And there was concern here that if they committed to that money from the feds, once the feds stopped priming the pump, the state would have to pick up the bill, the tab.
Correct. Well, because under the program, while the state was fully funding, I mean, while the federal government would fully fund the state for 3 years, there would be a phase in. The federal government would always pay at least 90%. But again, you had some legislators who were saying they're not going to be able to afford to pick up this 90% every year, and then what are we going to do? So, but that's an argument that, at least for the moment, is settled. I mean, Greitens is not going to change the course on that.
Got to take a break now. We're talking with Joe Manis, a St. Louis Public Radio political reporter, and we're going behind the headlines on the budget that was announced yesterday by the proposed budget, I should say, by our new governor, Eric Greitens. Joe will be back in just a moment. We'll continue the discussion, but we'll take this break first. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to the conversation with Joe Manis. Joe, I wonder if where we are now financially in the state of Missouri gives any new momentum, if that's even the right word, to Rex Sinkfield's proposal for eliminating the state income tax for an expanded sales tax. Does that make any sense in this new environment?
No, and frankly, a lot of legislators were cool to that. I think that, so that sort of died the last couple years. Actually, I mean, Singfeld has shifted his focus a little bit on to education, but also to who he backs and why. The big player right now in Jeff City is David Humphreys, the businessman in Joplin, who for him, right to work, it was the thing, and they made sure that they got that passed.
He slept in this morning, well, very comfortably,
yes,
I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah, now that that is now official law.
And in fact, I just got a text. This is switching back to our Medicaid discussion. I just got a text from one of the former legislators who's really on top of this, a Republican. So a shout out. So she said that some of the new programs, even though the state did not expand Medicaid, there were some new programs that they were able to get 90% federal match on. So she wanted to make sure that we made that clear. Now, there is in the governor's proposal, one of the things he did not mention in his announcement, which could affect potentially some of your listeners, is that he is proposing to change the eligibility requirements for people on Medicaid. This is generally elderly or disabled who get home health care services or are in nursing homes. And apparently this would affect about one-third of the 60,000 people who now get such services. And some of it, from what the budget director indicated yesterday, it's going to be it's based somewhat on the type of health issues they have. But that will affect about 20,000 people.
That was one of the headlines within the headlines, that being that these folks really were going to take a significant hit in
this
budget.
Yeah. Yes, yes. And these are... these are generally elderly or disabled. Yeah. And so, yes, I think we'll see the fallout in the next few weeks because obviously this would not go into effect until July 1st. And it would depend, again, on what the General Assembly does. But I think this is one of the proposals that will be getting some scrutiny by the General Assembly.
It's sort of a housekeeping thing here. The governor is not through with it now. The legislature gets it and will do what it's going to do. But it goes back to him, and he has a little bit of latitude when the budget comes back, doesn't he?
Yes. Now, this is something because the governor has a lot of power in this state, more so than the president on as far as financial stuff. So what will happen is the General Assembly, they see his budget, and they may just rip it up. And sometimes, and then they start, and they put together their own, which may include the governor's stuff, and it may not. As I mentioned earlier, there were some perceptions because they're all Republicans that it'd be a love fest. I don't know if that's necessarily the case. So the General Assembly will be crafting their own budget, looking at what the governor proposed. They have until early May to get this through both chambers and back on the governor's desk. Then the governor can either sign it, he can reject parts of it, he can line item veto certain things. What the governor cannot do is add money that they cut out. So if they cut out something, he or she has no recourse. And the other thing that's a change is that if voters may recall that a few years ago they passed a constitutional amendment that allows the General Assembly to overrule the governor on some of the cuts that he or she makes. So when they come back in September, they could vote on if he makes some changes that they don't like, they can vote to overrule him on that. But at the same time, the governor is still under this responsibility under the Missouri Constitution. The budget has to be balanced by June 30th. So during the spending year, it's the governor's job. It has to be. So maybe they don't like, maybe the General Assembly overruled him on cut X. But if he still has to make sure it's balanced, he's going to have to cut something else.
Is the does the structure in Missouri is it set up in such a way that would prohibit the kind of situation they have in Illinois right now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, in some ways, that's one of the reasons Missouri has such a strong bond rating, is because Missouri is one of those states where you cannot have you can maybe run a little deficit during the year, you know, as far as cash flow, but by June 30th, by midnight, that's got to be balanced. And then you start a new year on July 1st. So, yeah, that's one of the reasons many of our pension programs, you know, there's a lot of individual contributions from the workers or from the teachers. And there's different things that have set up in part. That's one of the reasons that Missouri doesn't face some of these problems that Illinois has, because Illinois can run a deficit. We cannot.
What are some of the other things in this budget, as announced yesterday, that caught your eye that we should be alerting folks to?
Well, one of the things that the governor has done, aside, although he's had to make some trims, and that includes some agricultural programs, but he has put in about $100 million more for state mental health services. Now, most of that money actually is federal, thanks to Senator Roy Blunt. Missouri is one of eight states that are getting some extra money for a demonstration program. But we do benefit, so that's in the budget. There's also about $40 million for various state programs that provide services for children with special needs or who have been removed from their homes because of abuse or neglect. There's also some money, close to $34 million, to help about 1,500 more children and adults with developmental disabilities. And there's also about $11 million, this is also federal money, to coordinate the state efforts to fight the opioid epidemic. And there's also some money, a couple million, to improve cybersecurity for the state. And one of the interesting things is that there is money. It's not a huge amount, but still it means something. There's about $3 million more for public safety, and that includes about $700,000 specifically earmarked for tasers and body armor for state troopers.
That's no surprise coming from Eric Greitens.
Yeah, and about $250,000 to set up a blue alert program, which he talked about during the campaign, mm-hmm. to highlight. So if a policeman is under fire or they're targeted, this is the idea, is to let the public know. It's kind of a police version of the Amber Alert. And he also put in $5.5 million more for state veterans' homes and cemeteries. And the governor also has made clear he's very interested in doing what he can with some of the existing programs to help veterans. He is a former Navy SEAL.
Folks who want to really get into the weeds on this, I would recommend that they go to your story at sdopublicradio.org, and there's more information there and various charts and graphics to help out.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Thanks to the Office of Administration. Yes, okay. Got some great graphics.
I'd like to talk about a couple of other things. We've already mentioned higher education early on. Big hits there.
Yes.
The headlines indicated UMSL's going to be concerned about that. We've talked about right to work. This came as no surprise to anybody. That
no.
was number one on the agenda. That is now law. He's going to sign it. It's not yet been signed, but he will. Let me talk to you about some other political things, Joe. You've got so much on your plate. Curious as to your reaction to Mayor Slay's endorsement of Lyda Crewson yesterday. Were you surprised that he would endorse anybody prior to this crowded primary?
I thought he might not.
Yeah,
I'm not surprised it's Crewson because they hold similar views on some things, or rather similar approaches to city government, and he's known her for a long time. So I wasn't totally surprised, but I wasn't sure if he was going to endorse anybody. I mean, there has been some pressure early on in one of his top campaign aides, operatives, Richard Callow, actually works for one of the other candidates, Tashara Jones. So I think that the mayor, for whatever reason, made a decision that he needed to say something. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to read into why, but this is a crowded field, more than a dozen candidates, but really it's considered mainly around five Democrats.
Sure.
Because we're a Democratic state. Mm-hmm. So Democratic city. And so all this focus is on who wins the Democratic primary in March. And so it's down to these five. And I think he could have some influence. He could, especially absentee voting will be coming up shortly. And that may be why he somewhat timed it a little bit, too.
Would you anticipate, because of the number of African Americans in this field, that vote will just be split amongst those candidates and that all of this is to the advantage of a white candidate?
On paper, that's true. But and if you look at St. Louis's political background, that's often been the case. Yeah. I mean, on both sides, where they, you know, play the numbers, try to make sure you only have one, you know, candidate of one race, and then you try to split it with another race. It's one of the more sorry parts of St. Louis history. But on the other hand, voters, especially younger voters under 40, and I've had some public officials and former public officials talk about this to me, younger voters don't pay so much attention to race. And they're more looking at what the candidate's views are and kind of whether or not they are signaling new approaches. So you've got some candidates, just Tishara Jones in particular, but all of them are. Louis Reed, who's the Board of Aldermen president. Jeffrey Boyd, Antonio French. They all have – all these are the four African-American candidates who are the most well-known. Hmm. And some feel that they could attract substantial numbers from millennials. And again, and that race won't have an won't be a part of it. That's going to be what they're talking about, what they're saying. And I was at a forum a little over a week ago on a Sunday afternoon that was just a few blocks from here, and was just to get some background for some stuff I was writing. The place was packed. More than 1,500 people showed up, and the fire marshal shut down. So there was potentially dozens of people who couldn't even get into the room, which because it was so packed. And I was able to get in, and it was fascinating to watch how many younger people were there and how engaged they were. And this was not a racial thing. This was all about issues. So I think that if the candidate who can energize younger voters, I think race may not be as big a factor as some would think, is what I'm saying.
We'll be reading what you have to write about all of this. Joe Manis, thank you so much for being with us and taking us behind the headlines. It's always a pleasure.
Well, thanks for asking me.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.